I think that the college for all mentality that unfortunately, I graduated from high school in 1986. The students who I went to school with, if you went to the career center, if you went to the vocational school, it wasn't cool. And I think that that stereotype has continued. I think that it's also an issue with high school guidance counselors and parents and the obsession with the four-year college degree.
The answer to last episode's trivia question is, complete height is 305 feet. Hey guys, we'll get into the podcast in just a second. However, I'm looking for more great guests for the Blue Collar Voices show, and I've updated this older podcast with this announcement from November 2019. I am planning a road trip across America and including parts of Canada. I'll tell you more about both of these at the end of this podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Blue Collar Voices show. Today, I have with me Tim Spurlock, who partners with Chris. Tim and Chris are business partners and run American Diesel Training Centers. American Diesel Training Centers is attempting to get ahead of a current and growing shortage of diesel mechanics. Tim, welcome.
Hey, thanks, John. It's great to be here.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show. And to start off with, summarize briefly, or we can actually go into a little more detail about what the problem is you guys are trying to solve.
Sure. The problem is brutally simple. The United States needs 30,000 new mechanics to enter the workforce every year. And currently, U.S. schools are producing between 4,000 and 5,000 mechanics.
That is...
It's a problem. And I'll give you a little bit of backstory. I spent my entire career up until we founded the company in educational publishing, and I ran sales for a company that produced curriculum, both print and online, for automotive and truck schools. So we had a big portfolio of customers, and so I've been to the largest programs in the United States that pretty much everyone's heard of, community college programs, down to the tiniest little high school with maybe five students. And the thing that really got me interested in this phenomenon, and I would call it, you could call it a phenomenon or you could call it a crisis, is that in general, there are no bodies in the classrooms. So there's really multiple things that we need to solve for. But the most important thing that we need to solve for is people just aren't coming into this industry.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's really several things. I think you can start out with the two-generation, what I would call ignoring the vocational education system. I think that the college for all mentality that unfortunately, I graduated from high school in 1986. The students who I went to school with, if you went to the career center, if you went to the vocational school, it wasn't cool. And I think that that stereotype has continued. I think that it's also an issue with high school guidance counselors and parents and the obsession with the four-year college degree.
I think that that is something that's pervasive through all trades.
Agree. Yeah. It's a big problem. And I think one of the challenges also, especially when you look at the mechanic side, even if, let's just say, we could flip on a switch and funding levels would be at where they need to be and people got behind it, it's still not sexy. So when you hear people talk about the skilled trades for the 21st century, do you notice nobody ever talks about a mechanic? They talk about, you know, CNC. They talk about robotics. They don't talk about basic automotive or truck mechanics and skills needed to keep this country running.
The more you sweat and the dirtier you get, the less attractive it is. The less there's more of a stigma associated with that.
Yeah, and I think the funny thing is that it's not funny. It's sad. Is that we believe that that's completely false, right? Because here's what we tell students when they come through our program: is that this is just the starting line, right? This is just a start. So if you want to become a master mechanic, you could become a master mechanic. But guess what? Let's say that you turn wrenches for 3 or 4 years and you decide that's just not for you. You can move into parts. You can move into service. You can move into management. There are many highly compensated CEOs out there who started out on the shop floor as mechanics.
Absolutely. And I will tell you that when I go to the auto parts store and I have a guy that knows what he's doing and is able to help me get a part or something like that, that is much preferred over somebody just looking the parts up in a catalog.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
They're a great resource at that point.
Yes, for sure.
What motivated you to start a training school?
Yeah, a couple things. The number one motivation here is that after what I had seen working with schools across the country and doing a lot of research into what was really causing, and I just focused mostly on the diesel mechanic side, is that I just had a really hard time coming to terms with the fact that some schools out there were charging students $40,000 to $50,000 for a degree to move into this field. And so on day one of that job, that student is saddled with a strangling student loan debt that they will probably never recover from. So they weren't starting out on first base. They were starting out in the dugout. And I just really had a problem with that. And then what we found as we talked to a lot of companies is that companies really didn't care if a student had a 2-year degree from a community college. They didn't care that a student went to one of the brand name technical schools out there. What they wanted were basic attributes. They wanted attitude. They wanted aptitude. They wanted showing up on time. They wanted a willingness to work with others. Mechanical ability was important, but it's probably five or six on the list in terms of what was really important to companies. So it's like, so wait a minute. So if we figured out how to provide a pipeline of proficiently trained employees to companies, we could help people, we could change lives, and at the same time, we could provide a fantastic service to employers out there. So that's what we did.
That sounds good. And just while I'm thinking about that, and you're talking about the actual mechanical proclivity to be a little lesser down the line, if you have somebody that's all they're doing is, let's say they're changing out an alternator or they're doing basic servicing, that doesn't require a high degree of skill and proficiency, but somebody still needs to do it.
That's exactly right. And that's what we really focus on here at American Diesel. Our program at American Diesel is 12 weeks, it's part-time, and it's 300 hours. So students who come here can actually work while they come to school here. We charge 20% of what your typical technical school will charge. And so I'm digressing a little bit, but I'll get back to it. The biggest barriers that we've solved for here are time and money. There's a massive untapped skilled labor pipeline out there. We've proven it. We know it. There are plenty of people who want to work. We don't believe this stuff that nobody wants to work and millennials this and millennials that. But the problem is these folks don't have the time and they don't have the money. So what we do is in a 300-hour training program, we focus on the basics, right? So we focus on preventative maintenance, on brakes, on electrical, on light mechanical. We don't do any type of engine teardowns. We don't talk about rebuilding engines. We don't talk about high performance. We talk about the basic tasks that companies need to get trucks on the road and keep them running.
And the way, and I'm just sitting there thinking about this allows them to get guys in that frees up the mechanics that know those types of things to focus on those particular chores as far as the engine rebuilds. And they don't even have to worry about all the, I'm going to call it, more mundane service issues.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think that's one thing that we found. And we've met with over 200 companies. And I think that's what we found is, oddly enough, due to the standards that U.S. schools are held to, they actually overtrain people for what companies want. Because I don't care who you are, there's no company on the planet that's going to take a 21 or a 22 year old or somebody who's just had 13 months of training and put them rebuilding engines. Won't happen. To rebuild an engine or to service a Kenworth engine or a Cummins engine, you need 3 to 5 years of advanced training at the factory, right? So the jobs that companies need folks to do are not the skills that the schools are training their students to perform. So the problem is students come out of a longer program or a more expensive program, and they go to the company and say, we want to make $25 to $30 an hour and rebuild engines. And the company says, no, we're going to pay you $16 to $20 an hour, and you're going to do PMs and you're going to do brakes, and we're going to see what you what you're made of.
But that's an excellent starting point.
Great starting point.
And although that's not an incredibly high wage, it sure beats working at McDonald's or a local warehouse pulling product.
Well, here's the thing about the wages. I think there's a couple things about the wages. I think that the transportation industry in general is behind the curve, but you can see it building right now. Like I said, it's about ready to become, in fact, it already is, a buyer's market in terms of being a technician. And what we tell folks is, yeah, you're going to start out at $16 to $20 an hour. Now, there's almost certainly going to be overtime included, so you can make some overtime. You're not going to have any student loan debt, or if you even have a little bit, it's going to be a very modest payment. So you're not starting behind the curve like that. But the thing is, you can move up rapidly. So we had a young man who came through this program last year. He bounced around. He was a laborer, and he did some carpentry work and stuff like that. He came through the program. He went to an independent shop here in Columbus. The independent shop started him out at $15 an hour, and they paid for his tuition to come to school here. Within a year, he was making $23 an hour. So in 1 year, he'd gotten a $16,000 raise. So we have many folks who come through this program who, after a year or two, they're making between $50,000 and $60,000 a year. And guess what? My son goes to Ohio State. The average salary of a Fisher College of Business graduate at the Ohio State University is $52,500. And to get that degree and to get that job, you're going to have to pay $125,000 to $150,000. We have many people come through this program who are making that kind of money, who have either gotten a full scholarship or at the most to pay $7,500 on their own.
First off, that is an awesome story that guy was able to make that change in his life. And it's a good thing that you are out there doing this. You had mentioned earlier that you said it was a $300 tuition.
No. So our tuition is there's two payments. And if we set the program up like this for a reason. No payment is due upon entry. After 2 weeks, there's a $500 materials fee due. Right? Because guess what? If someone doesn't like it here in 2 weeks, or we don't think that they're going to make it, we can very easily part ways. So after 2 weeks, they decide that they want to be here, and we decide that they're a good fit, because we're a selective program. We don't take everybody who comes in the door. So we're a selective program. So after 2 weeks, if you decide you want to be here, $500 for materials due. The balance of that tuition, which is $7,500, is not due till you either A, complete the program, or B, get a job. So even after 4 or 5 weeks, what that does is, again, if somebody isn't doing what they need to do, if they're not showing up on time, if they don't have an attitude, if they slipped under the net of a recruiting process, again, we could part ways. And likewise, if somebody comes in week 5 or 6 and says, you know what, this program is just not for me, I decided I don't want to be a mechanic, we're good with that. We're going to be here whether they're there or not.
And at that particular point in time, no harm, no foul. Shake their hand and tell them good luck.
Good luck. Best of luck. And sometimes we had a kid, he just didn't have the chops to be a mechanic, but we worked with one of our partners, and this kid had some welding experience. The guy hired him as a welder.
That's good.
Yeah.
So you're always looking out for them one way or the other.
We feel very, very strongly that we are here to mentor our students. So yes, we track them. We know them intimately. We know their families. Chris and I personally interview everyone who comes through the door here who's interested in coming to the program. So yeah, we really feel that our jobs are to be real with them. Our jobs are to tell them, you're going to start working out. You're going to start out making $16 to $20 an hour. But if you grind it out, if you put your nose, if you put your head down and work hard, you can make excellent money, and you can have a skill that no one will ever take away from you. You will never worry about a job.
How much of what they learn here is translatable to, let's say, they decided they didn't want to work on big trucks, but they wanted to go to work at a dealership working on automotives?
A lot of it. As we like to say, electrical is electrical is electrical. Everything on the truck side is just bigger. So now probably one of the more pronounced differences would be, for example, and the industry is starting to move here a little bit, but trucks are drum brakes, cars are disc brakes, right? So there's some little changes like that, but it kind of goes both ways. We've had several folks who have worked at, let's say, an oil change place or a light mechanical place, you know, automotive place, and they're working flat rate, and they come in here and they transition to being a diesel mechanic. So it kind of goes both ways.
And go ahead and just define flat rate for me.
So flat rate is, it's very prevalent in the automotive industry, and it's not extremely prevalent at all in the diesel industry. So a flat rate means that basically there's a standard that amount of hours that will take you to do a job. So you'll make X amount of dollars for a brake job, right? So let's say that the company will say that, okay, I'm assigning you a brake job. It's going to take you 4 hours, and this is what you're going to make. Well, if you can complete that job in 2 hours, you've just gotten 2 hours of free work that you can go put towards another money-making job. It's almost like a commission-based type situation. So it's extremely prevalent on the automotive side, and a lot of automotive mechanics don't like it because it's very hard to predict what their income is going to be. If the shop's really busy, they'll make a ton of money. If it's slow during the winter, they're probably not going to make a lot of money. So on the truck side, there are only a few companies out there that I know of who actually do flat rate, and most of them are your private local independent shops.
But the flat rate is more of a, I guess, a motivator to help.
Yes, that's exactly right. It would be a motivator.
Okay. So going forwards, I mean, you're training everybody. We're looking at the market the way it is right now. What do you predict as far as 10, 20, 30 years from now? What do you see the industry looking like?
We feel that this is an entirely solvable problem. But if companies don't get on board, and if companies don't invest and devote resources to this, it's going to be really ugly. And I think that just the way that the system has always worked, where companies have been able to just reach into, and I get it, right? Reach into the US educational system and pluck out graduates and then put them to work. Those days are kind of over because A, the US educational system isn't providing nearly the amount of mechanics needed. And B, just the fact that it's a market driven thing, right? So there's going to be so much competition amongst companies for employees. Everything's going to go up. Prices are going to go up. Wages are going to go up. I don't see right now from a let's say a Manhattan project that would be created by the US government to solve this problem. I think things are so fractured on a statewide basis and there's no real central focus point for this. I just don't really see it changing that much because the real problem is not a training problem. It's an input problem. That's the problem. There just aren't enough people coming into the business. And we think that we figured out how to fix that. And I think what you'll see also is you'll see a lot more of companies doing their own training academies because they have to do it. And I think you're going to see less and more companies get involved financially and less reliance on the schools because the schools just can't produce the amount needed. It's a mathematical fact.
So I see that we have training and companies that are going to start doing the training themselves, but there's also the incentive. What are we doing to incentivize people other than the fact that, hey, you can make good money doing this and we all like to have good money? How are we going to incentivize people to look at this as a career choice?
Well, here's our belief, and actually we've proved it. We think that the wrong group to look at, not that we would ignore them. We don't think that the high school kids are the right group to look at, and And I've done a lot of research on this, and I've gone to meetings and stuff, and I just go crazy when I hear people talk about, well, we need to get these kids involved when they're little, and we need to bring a bulldozer to the school and let the kids climb all over the bulldozer so they'll become interested. Nobody knows what they want to do when they're 16 or 17 or 18 years old. They don't. So looking at teenagers to solve this problem is dead in the water. We feel that there's an entire two generation of untapped talent, and they're working in high effort, low skill, low wage jobs, and they just need basic training. And the incentive is, okay, you're not working at this factory anymore in a job you hate, running a punch press, making $12 an hour with a 3% raise. You're now working for a global company with a defined career path, with a phenomenal brand name, and you can work there as long as you want. And oh, by the way, if for some reason something happens and that doesn't work out for you, there's 10 other companies going to hire you because of the skills that you have. And you can make really good money. There are many diesel mechanics in Columbus, Ohio, making six figures a year. Many diesel mechanics. You've got to work and you've got to grind, but it's there.
And to be clear, when you're talking about these diesel mechanics that are making the six figures, are they working on the engines or all the other items?
Probably, I think once you get to that level, so you could be a really good diesel mechanic and you could work in an independent shop and you could work on everything. You could work on tractors, you could work on agricultural equipment, you could work on heavy equipment. So you'll find those folks. You'll find folks at a major package company making money like that. But the money's there, right? I mean, in general, now, are you going to get rich being a diesel mechanic unless you would own your own shop? And I know some of those guys, probably not. But can you have a very nice life and a very nice lifestyle with no, at least coming through our program, right? With little to no student loan debt, it's entirely possible.
Okay. So tell me, you've already given one example, but tell me another example of somebody that has come through the program and made a difference in their life.
Sure. Oh, we had a, I love this story. So we had, last summer, we had a gal who came through the program, and she had really, Iraqi war veteran, and she'd really been through the ringer, and we liked her immediately. And she came through the program. She did excellent. And so when she literally had a job offer before she finished the program. And so, I mean, she'd really struggled. She'd had some serious personal struggles, and we knew about that. And so she got done with the program, and she was just about ready to take this job. And another company called her, and they said, hey, we'd like to talk. And it was a dealership. And they said, we'd like you to come talk to us. And so she called us and said, hey, what should I do? And we said, look, go talk to them. It never hurts to talk. And so the job that this dealership had for was kind of a combination between, there was some light mechanical stuff, but there was also some service writing involved. But they were offering her, less than the first company was offering her. And she said, look, I just can't do it. Like, I need this amount of money to live on. So they came back to her and they said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're not only going to match the salary, we're going to give you a piece of the action on the overall monthly profit the dealership makes. And I said to her, I said, do you realize you just accomplished what most people dream of doing after 20 years? This company is giving you a percentage of all the profit that they make at that dealership. So this gal went from Iraqi war veteran, really tough personal challenges, just pulled herself up by her bootstraps, came through the program, and she's working for a company now where she gets a percentage of profit at that dealership.
That is awesome.
Seriously, I could sit here and tell you stories like that and for 10 podcasts. We could just have 10 podcasts where I could tell you.
Well, I don't know that I want to go quite that long, but I do love the stories. And so while you have that many, go ahead, tell me one more. I think that this is good stuff.
So we had a kid. I'm 50, so I can call. I call them all kids. We had a kid who came through the program, and we interviewed him, and he had some challenges on his background. We do background checks on everyone, and no one steps through this door here if they have anything in their background where there's violence or anything sexual. Well, he'd had some substance abuse issues, and he was very upfront with us about them. And so he said, "Do you think that you can find something for me?" We said, "I don't know, man. We'll give it a shot." So this kid, he never missed a day. He was here every day. And I'd gone to his Facebook page, and I could see some of the challenges he was facing on his Facebook page. And so he comes through the program, and lo and behold, one of our company partners, we were very upfront with him about him. We said, "Here's this kid. He's done a great job in the program. You're going to find some stuff on his background, but in 12 weeks, he has been nothing but a model student." And they said, "Sure, we're going to do it. We're going to hire this guy." So they hired this guy, and I saw him like on his last day here, and I knew what they were paying this guy. And I said, "Jacob, you do realize that you're going to make about $55,000 a year. $55,000 this year, right?" He goes, "Yeah." And I go, "What's the most you've ever made in your life?" And he's like, "I don't know, like maybe $12 or $15 an hour." I'm like, "That is life changing.
Yes.
That is life changing." So that's really what we're all about here. We are all about working with people to help them take that next step in life. And we don't feel, I mean, and we've had some phenomenal 18-year-old, 19-year-old kids who've come through this program, but we really like the 25-year-old who's maybe had a couple challenges they've had to overcome and has had to pull themselves up and really wants to use this as a true stepping stone to a career. That's your secret to the skilled labor shortage.
I like your attitude, and that's a fantastic thing. How has the demand shifted as our economy has gotten better?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously there's been more demand as the economy's gotten better. And I think that we would be naive if we didn't think that at some point there's going to be some type of a recession or contraction. I mean, let's all hope that it's nothing like we faced in 2008, 2009. So there's going to be some of that stuff. But I think that the demographics are so strong in terms of the baby boomers are retiring. There's nobody coming into the business, and this entire country runs on logistics. So, I mean, and all you got to do is look at Amazon. The bigger Amazon gets and the bigger Walmart gets, and here's a really, I think, kind of a key that a lot of people don't talk about. I mean, I'm sure the guys on Wall Street talk about it, but the more and more retail, the brick and mortar contracts, and the more and more it's about convenience and it's about ordering, all that stuff has to move via truck. And the second thing is people say, "Well, what are you going to do if Tesla hits it big with their electric trucks?" And we say, "That's great, because guess what? It's actually easier. So those trucks still have tires. They still need brakes. They still need PMs." So we see, look, nothing's perfect. This business, there's no guaranteed anywhere. But if we're making bets, we're pushing the chips to the middle of the table that the demand for diesel mechanics or mechanics to service trucks is going to do nothing but grow. Now, will it grow at the 12% rate a year? It may not. But will it ever sharply contract? No way.
It's interesting. I had that down as one of my questions, as what about electric trucks? And I guess when I first started out, before we got into this conversation, I was thinking just more about the engine side of things. And as you've explained it, there's so much more to this. It doesn't matter whether you have an electric motor turning it or a diesel motor. The drivetrain, the brakes, the electrical system will even be more of a concern as far as understanding the electrical system. And there'll be a whole new component that you'll have to understand about the batteries and the charging systems and things like that.
Correct. And guess what? I mean, this is something we haven't talked about too. When one of those nice electric trucks turns a curve too sharp, or hits a bridge, somebody's got to patch that trailer. So, you know, that same thing, many companies out there, they not only have diesel mechanics, but they have trailer techs. So it's as long as goods and services are moving by truck across this country, the people who take care of those vehicles are in a really, really good spot. And that ain't going to change.
Okay. So let's just say you've got somebody that you got your influx coming in and you have people becoming trained in this. Let's take it to a step higher. So these people, how can they advance their careers? Now, you already mentioned about having your own business, but what are some of the ways, what are some of the solid ways that these guys can advance themselves so they're not locked into just being a mechanic or a tech? They're actually stepping up. You'd mentioned parts. You had mentioned a couple of other things.
Yeah, I mean that's already happened here. So we've had some folks, not a lot, but a couple who've come through the program, and pretty quickly they decided that being a mechanic just wasn't for them. So they're working in parts. So we look at it like we are a portal for talent to enter the transportation industry. Now, our portal just puts them onto the shop floor where they really learn everything. So just think about, you're kind of getting an MBA, for lack of a better word, working on a shop floor, because many of these, all these businesses, they're very well run, right? So there's a lot of numbers, and there's a lot of technology, and there's a lot of efficiencies, and there's a lot of metrics that are involved. So mechanics, it's not just about I'm changing out these brakes. It's about I'm documenting this job. I'm doing the computer work. I'm doing the paperwork. I'm using diagnostic tools. So I'm understanding how to diagnose. I'm understanding how to solve problems. So that translates and I'm dealing with people. I'm dealing with customers who are ticked off that their truck isn't working, because many mechanics also, they'll work the front of the shop too. They'll deal with customers who come in and say, well, wait a minute, I thought my truck was going to be ready. It's not ready. Or the check engine light is already on again. So it's really a perfect training ground for moving into all facets of the business. Obviously, you're going to know all the parts, but you can move into, you could be a service rider. And guess what? Wouldn't it be way more effective to be a service rider after you've been a mechanic and you've learned all the technical and all the mechanical parts of a truck? You can move into management. You can move into human resources. So we really look at ourselves as, again, we're a net, right? So we're throwing our net out into the ocean and we're pulling a bunch of fish in and we're putting them in this, in this little pond, and then they can move into being a mechanic, or they can move into the different parts of the business. But more than anything, we're a portal that brings talent into the business.
A couple of things about that. You had mentioned all of the different exposure they would have to dealing with customers, diagnostics, all of those types of things. This may be the first time where some of these people have had to deal with that many stimuli coming at them different directions. And that in itself can be life changing if you've always been more of a just kind of a heads down, single task oriented job, if you know what I mean.
There's a spot for everyone in this business. So if you are that guy who just wants to be left alone and just grind away, there's plenty of work for you, plenty of spots for you. If you're that, and we've had them come through this program, we've had folks come through this program who they just couldn't soak up enough knowledge. There's many roles for you there too, obviously.
So are you a reader?
Yeah, of course.
Awesome. Name a couple of books that you just think are fantastic.
I'm a big fan of I'm a big fan of Malcolm Gladwell because I use his Outliers and his David and Goliath books really to kind of, it's really guided my entire professional philosophy. And I when I read David and Goliath, I thought, holy cow, that's me. And so when I was in the sales world, we used a lot of that from that book to sort of inform our strategy, because we were the small company and we were trying to take on these big companies, and we actually did it and we had a phenomenal run. And that's really the way that we view ourselves here. we view ourselves as an outlier. We view ourselves as a disruptor. We view ourselves as David, right? When Chris and I started this business, we literally had an empty 20,000 square foot warehouse with one Snap-on toolbox. And our first few people came in to interview about the program and were like, look at what all this could be. And somehow they trusted us and they signed up. But we've always been, we really find ourselves, we're a champion of you know, the champion of the little guy, the champion of the fighter. We love to take on status quo. We think that the U.S. educational system, and by the way, for the record, my mom's a teacher, my wife's a teacher, but we think the U.S. educational system has failed tens of thousands and millions of students by the college for all mentality and the fact that vocational school is a dirty word. And so we really believe that that we want to turn the educational system in the way that mechanics are identified, trained, and placed into industry on its head. And the fact that we've got graduates now after only 18 months working at 75 different companies. All of our, we have graduates working at every major dealership out there. 20% of our companies work for dealerships. We feel that we're well on the way. And the second thing, and I haven't mentioned it yet, is we've actually designed, we started getting calls from companies saying, well, can you put a school in Michigan? And can you put a school in Texas? And we said, well, that's kind of an expensive proposition to do that. So we developed a system where we can embed our system of recruiting and training inside a company and do it at their location. So we're no longer constrained by geographical boundaries.
And so if you do embed that into a different company, is that where like the students will be trained at those locations? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. So we use our exact same recruiting system that we use here in Columbus, Cincinnati, and we do virtually all of our recruiting via social media. We do one radio spot, and that's only because we sponsor the Cleveland Browns and we like the perks that we get for that. But everything that we do is via social media. So we take that same strategy and we recruit on behalf of the companies, and then we work with the companies to implement our system in their own space or their own location. And we do a train the trainer, and we watch them and partner with them the whole time they're running their trainees through that system. And then the people move immediately to work within that company.
So they're using your system that you designed, you and Chris, and put together.
Mm-hmm.
Where mm-hmm. did you get your knowledge and expertise to put all this together?
Really easy. So this is amazing. I love this story. But in general, I'm not a subject matter expert, but Chris is. So Chris and I could have easily, and we did it when we first conceived the business, but we could have easily sat down and said, this is exactly what people need to know. And the easiest way to do that, and we did it, was you interview companies and you say, what do you want in an entry-level diesel mechanic? Well, for the first time in 2017, the Technology Maintenance Council, who is they're the training arm of the American Trucking Association, they did a survey, and or they convened a task force. And Chris was on the task force. And they sent out a survey to hundreds of employers, and their question was, what skills do you want an entry-level diesel mechanic to know? So they got a bunch of responses back, and they threw stuff out, and they added stuff, and they narrowed it down to 420 tasks. And a task would be defined as changing brakes, adjusting valve covers. And that's exactly what we teach to you here. That's our curriculum. Now, it can flex or it could contract based on the needs of a particular company. We can add company-specific or OEM-specific material if added, but our core curriculum are those 420 tasks as identified by the Technology Maintenance Council in spring of 2017.
Okay, that's zeroing in specifically to what's needed, I'll tell you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so Chris is the one that actually started the teaching of this.
Yeah. So Chris was our first. So it's a great story, but Yeah, the original plan was for Chris to teach both morning and evening classes, which was completely nuts, And so the funny thing is we started it and we started out doing some radio ads. And one day we got an email to our website from this gentleman said, "Hey, I heard your radio ads. My name is Myron. I heard your radio ads. I love what you guys are doing. I'm a diesel mechanic, but I've also been an instructor. I would love to work with you." So I called him up, and we didn't have any money in the budget to hire an instructor. And I called him up, and I loved him. I'm like, "This guy's great." So I told Chris, and by the way, Chris has the first nickel he ever earned, right? So I said, "We got to talk to this guy." So Myron came in, and Chris and I liked him so much, we hired him. We just found the money to hire him. And so Myron's our director of education. His name's Myron Benner. Great guy. He teaches our morning class. And then Chris taught our first couple evening classes, but we've been so busy developing the business that we've hired here in Columbus an evening instructor who's also excellent, a guy named Daniel Craig. But yeah, Chris is really – I'm the crazy idea mad scientist guy. And Chris and I disagree about pretty much everything, which is why we work so well together, because I'll go to the ledge and he'll pull me back off the ledge. And Chris came up through Kenworth. He's, in my opinion, the best truck engineer in the United States. He literally could build a truck with his bare hands. And I guarantee he could name every part that goes into a Kenworth truck if you laid him out for him. So he's a self-made mechanic, but he has an engineering degree from Ohio State, but you would never know he was an engineer if you saw him. Never in a million years.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Have you heard of the book called E-Myth Revisited?
I have not. No, I haven't.
I've recently started that book and I would highly recommend it and just check it out. And I can actually send you a copy if you'd like.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'll grab it on Amazon or something. Not a big deal.
When you wake up every day, what is on your mind as the most passionate thing driving you?
That's a great question. The most passionate thing driving me is bringing people into this industry who otherwise would have never had a chance. That's what drives me. It's funny. Like I wake up every morning and I have a pretty standard routine. You know, after checking email and checking LinkedIn or whatever, I write and I do tons of research and I write LinkedIn articles and I write, I write our marketing stuff and I work with our, Jake who does all of our marketing here, but our passion is introducing this phenomenal industry to people who it can make a huge difference in their lives and at the same time provide a fantastic service to companies around the United States.
That's awesome. I love that. I wish that Chris was able to be on the show today because
I'm sorry.
I had no idea, I have preconceived ideas, but knowing what he is and what he brings to the table, I would love to have his perspective.
Well, yeah, I mean, tee it up and do a separate show just with Chris. So it would be funny hearing both of us talk separately. That would be pretty funny. So, that would be good. But, so I would recommend that. That'd be fun.
When you were like growing up as a kid, did you have a proclivity towards mechanical things?
Zero, none. In fact, it's funny. My high school, my college roommate, who is also an engineer. He's an engineer for an oil company. He laughs at me. He goes, "I can't believe you're doing this." I mean, all my college buddies, they just think it's hilarious. But I'm less about the gears and wrenches and engines. And I'm all about the people side. I'm all about the I love to get phone calls from people who are interested in the program. I love to sit across the table from a young person who I can just tell by the look in their eyes that they've got it. I love that stuff. That's what keeps me going. And I love doing deals. I love working with companies and I love, anyone in sales who's been in sales, you got to believe in your product, right? And the beautiful thing about this is I don't believe in this product. I believe in it to my core, right? Like we've pushed everything into the middle of the table to make this thing work. So it just, it drives us every day, 7 days a week. We do this. We take text 24/7, 365. We don't do weekends. We don't do evenings. We tell folks when they come through this program, once you're in the family, you're always in the family. So if you go to work somewhere and something doesn't work out, the first thing we're going to tell you to do is grind it out, stick it out. But after a year or two, if it just doesn't work out, call us. We'll help you. We'll help you find somewhere else. We're not financial advisors, but a lot of these folks, that they may not come from the greatest background. So we say, invest in your 401k. If you need help in that stuff, call us. We've done this before. Chris and I have both seen, you know, as managers, I mean, he's had a lot. He had more than 200 people working for him at the Kenworth factory down in Chillicothe. I've always been better working with small groups. We've seen the mountaintops in terms of great things happening, but we've gone through some dark days also in previous lives, worked with previous companies with really serious people challenges that we've had to overcome. So we really view ourselves as kind of a second family to everyone who comes through here.
Again, I love that attitude. I love your passion. That is, I think hearing everything you're doing, it is just fantastic. I really do think so.
Oh, thank you.
So
we do too. Yeah, we love it.
It's obvious. It comes through. You're not like, yeah, we did this and we did this. It is definitely something that you are finding exciting. Yeah. What's another book that you would recommend?
Wow, you're really putting me on the spot here. And it's actually very timely, based on what's gone down the last couple of days here in Columbus, Ohio. I think the Urban Meyer book, Above the Line, I think it's Above the Line, his leadership book, is just fantastic. I think it is absolutely fantastic. And, you know, he talks a lot about it's not the event that happens, but it's how you respond to that event. I think he uses an equation, and it's like event plus response equals outcome. And I mean, we really try to kind of use that as a guiding principle here at American Diesel. And you really have to use that when you're an entrepreneur and you're running a startup and you're dealing with, you know, you're the little guy on the block. And we do a lot of fighting here, right? We are grinding, and we're grinding against sort of an entrenched educational system. We're grinding with an industry that somewhat understands and gets what we do, but maybe doesn't want to commit quite the financial resources they need to commit. So we're grinding. So we always have to be very mindful of the way that we respond to what happens on a daily basis here.
Have you any exposure to Seth Godin?
I have not.
He is quite fascinating, but one of the books he wrote was about school and the education system that we have and how it came about and what it's for and what it produces and how it needs to change. And
yes,
so many of the things that you're talking about is what he's talking about, that school was designed to make good, compliant workers. And it.
Right.
And he also touches on, you know, college and what it does for you. And I just see so much. It's even more interesting the fact that you've never heard of Seth, and to hear your particular perspective and aspect that is so similar, it just understates how correct both of you are, because you both are being exposed to that on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, and I have to be honest. I think my son actually read his book and did, which I don't think thrilled his English teacher or whatever, did one of his paper on that. But I used to love to read, and I still read. The problem is everything. I don't have the time to do pleasure reading these days. I wish I did, and I probably need to put more emphasis on it. But I'm deficient in that area.
Well, so. I could read all day long every day. I don't have time for that either.
Yeah.
I grab a little bit, like, you know, I'm laying down in bed, and, you know, maybe I read for 10 minutes.
I know.
And it's always on my phone.
Me too. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to definitely check out some of the books that you've recommended here. Now, I have read Malcolm Gladwell's Tipping Point.
Yes.
And that was very good.
That was a while ago, yeah. But I really like Outliers, and I like Outliers and David and Goliath better than Tipping Point. So I think those are good ones. Those are good ones. Yeah. I need my Kindle here with me. I'm drawing a blank on some other good ones. But we've been so busy for the last 2 years. I'm asleep. I try to read for like 5 minutes and I fall asleep. So
right, and you certainly do enough reading with documentation and marketing material.
Yes, for sure.
Well, I think that you've given me a pretty good background. Hey, how about one more story before we go?
One more story. Let me think here. Okay, I got a great story. So we got a call one day from I can't remember if it came in on a call or on the website, but it was a young man who he scheduled an appointment and his parents came in with him and he had Asperger's. And his dad said, you know, I'm an aircraft mechanic. He's interested in becoming a mechanic, but obviously with some of his challenges, we're worried that he will be able to do it. So we said what we always say, if you're game, we're game. So they said, we're game. And we were really worried about it, and we watched him very closely. And after about 3 days, he was like, I mean, this kid knew nothing. And he said, I just don't think this is for me. And we said, look, and we talked to his parents and said, don't give up on this thing. If he doesn't finish in 12 weeks, we can extend it as long as he needs to extend it. We can go 18 weeks. But one thing that we do here is we never put anyone out in the business who isn't ready to be on the business. So I'll make a long story short. That kid was here a half an hour early every day. He ended up being the most popular kid in the class. He was completely hilarious. And he loved 80s movies and 80s music. So, you know, kid's like 21, 22 years old. So he got along really well with all of us. But we have an online training program. And to get through it, from beginning to end, will take probably a normal person who doesn't know a lot, probably 16 to 20 hours. He went through that program 6 times. And I'm pretty sure I'm right about this. This is where I need Chris. I'm pretty sure he answered a total of 24,000 questions.
Wow.
As he went through this program. And he was just not going to be denied. And he wasn't ready. He wasn't ready to leave the program after 12 weeks. So we sat him down and talked to his folks and said, we don't think he's ready. So he came back for another 6 weeks and he finished it after 18 weeks and had a job offer almost immediately.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a situation. So, apologize. That's,
no, go ahead.
That's the type of thing that he could not have done in a regular college.
No way. No way. Not a chance. So yeah, that in our classes here, they're very small. I mean, we're typically about 10 students per 10 in the morning, 10 in the evening, sometimes it's less. So it really gives us a great opportunity to work close with these guys. And I don't think I mentioned this, but we're 85 to 90% hands-on. We always thought it was hilarious that the system would take guys who hated classroom and hated to read, and they would put them in classrooms and make them read. So we said, we'll never do this, right? So what we do is we flipped it on its head. We say, you're going to do your theory work online, and there's not a ton of reading involved, but you're going to do 85% of the work you're hands-on. And our classroom is right in the middle of our shop. So if an instructor is talking about something, they can just immediately go to the truck and demonstrate what needs to be shown versus if you look at a regular school, you're usually in a classroom and then you have 3 or 4 hours of lab time.
So you bring up an interesting point with that. And you talk about guys that don't like to read, you put them in a room and make them read. So do you find that the mindset of your typical students are the kind of people that just don't do well in a classroom reading experience?
Yes, 100%. 100%. So and that's why we designed our learning system the way that we designed it. Here, you're going to laugh at this. And I published Diesel Textbook. The average size, I don't say average, the size of your typical diesel or medium heavy truck textbook series is 3,600 pages. How many people do you think read 3,600 pages? Nobody. This is crazy. I think that's the problem is that, again, you got folks who don't like class. They're pushed into the college for all mentality. They go out, many of them go out to college, and guess what? Out of the 65% of students who now go to post-secondary education, only 25% actually graduate. So you got 40% of these people who have wasted all this time and have wasted all this money, and they have no real skills. And so what we did is we're like, well, this is crazy, right? So we built this learning system on top of what's called an adaptive learning platform. We licensed some really good market leading publisher content. We put it on this what's called an adaptive learning platform, which treats you differently than treats me, than treats Chris, and the system kind of learns you. And so there's not a lot of reading, on the beginning. It actually starts out asking you questions. And based on the way you answer those questions and the confidence level you have, it then serves you up relevant content to remediate those areas where you need help. And our folks really, really like it here. But yeah, again, that's the problem with the system is it's kind of the class. Everybody has to be in the classroom. And if you don't like being in the classroom, you're kind of a pariah, which is completely wrong.
Right. What about, do you have any insight on the number of students you have that have maybe been diagnosed with, say, ADHD?
That's, we don't ask those questions. Right, but right. I would say you're talking to one of them, by the way, I think that would be a tough one, but I wouldn't want to make a guess on ADHD, but I can definitely tell you I can't put a number on it, but there's a definite percentage of our students who, have challenges reading lots of text. So, and that's important, right? I mean, you have to be able to do those skills. You have to be able to read a job order or to use a computer. And we work really hard on that stuff. And we have a career services advisor who's an ex-teacher who works with those folks on that. But, we've definitely had those folks for sure. I just don't know how many.
And I think it's great that these people are actually finding something that suits them. You mentioned that you have ADHD, and I'll be honest with you. I have a problem myself. In the context of us doing this interview, I have to work very hard to stay focused because I have so many things that are pulling at my attention.
Yeah. Me too. Yeah. And the funny thing is, it's funny. Now that I run my own company, and maybe it's just a difference because I don't feel that pressure of working. I mean, I'm working for someone, but I don't have that boss bugging me all the time. But I'm able to kind of harness it and sort of surf it. So
yes.
I'll call Chris. I'm like, hey man, I'm not coming in for a couple hours. I'm surfing an ADHD wave, and I'm writing like crazy. So I can crank out like 5,000 words in a couple hours.
Do you find that when you're under pressure, you feel like your brain kind of ramp up, and then you can just get in a zone?
No, I think for me, it's the opposite. I think for me, it's when I'm not under pressure and then I can really get in the zone. It's kind of the opposite. And speaking of a book there, and I haven't read it, but there's supposedly a really good book out there. It's called The Edison Gene. And it really is a book because Thomas Edison was ADHD, and it's a book about how ADHD has allowed civilization to progress extremely farther than it would have had ADHD not be around, because so many of these guys like Henry Ford and Edison, and not that I'm remotely comparing I'm not trying to do that, but so many super successful people have it.
Yes. You do not find the typical person that is driving a company is not the person that could ever stand sitting at a desk plodding through the same work every day, day in and day out.
I would go out of my mind. Yeah.
In a heartbeat.
I would go out of my mind. Yeah, I'd lose it. Yeah. I can't even sit in the office here, like, because, you know, we'll typically sit around a table and Chris will start talking to Jake, who does our marketing, and then Myron will come in and want to tell some story. And I'm like, I got to get work in a different office. So I kind of get the best of both worlds. So I'll work at home maybe in the mornings, then I'll come in here and sort of see what's going on and make sure that we're all on the same page and in touch with the students and all that stuff. But yeah, having to sit in a cube every day, I would lose it. I couldn't do it.
I speculate that you can do almost instantaneous task switching.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I can go from 0 to 90 in about 2 seconds. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yes. I can be head deep in something and you can come interrupt me on something else. And almost immediately I'm zoned in on that. And I had to learn years ago that when I pulled out of something, I had to make notes about where I was on everything because when I came back, I was lost if I hadn't have.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, you got to learn how to harness it. If you can harness it, it's a great thing, right? If you can't, I was a terrible student. Oh, I was an awful student. I failed algebra. No, I failed science. I failed algebra. I graduated from high school with a 2.5 GPA in some little school down in Southern Ohio. I was a horrible student. And it really took, and I, you know, I got really lucky professionally and I fell into the right places and I was successful. But life, figuring things out, I would love to go back and be able to do high school over again in some cases.
If I could go back and do high school over again, indeed, it would be different. And I would understand why the heck I was being taught these things that just drove me nuts because I saw no applicable reason ever.
That was me too. I mean, literally, I used to say, yeah, you know, why do I need algebra? Why do I need geometry? Why do I need this? Why do I need that? And if Chris were sitting here, he'd say the same thing. He's like, I had to take calculus at Ohio State, engineering calculus. And to this day, I've never used calculus one time in my life. So I don't know. But that's what we focus on here. We focus on teaching people what they need to know, right? The skills they need to know, not theoretical. We teach practical. And I think that's one of the challenges with the educational system is it's gone along for so long and there's a lot of smart people who've been involved, but and there's so much theory and very little practical or hands-on.
I agree.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Well, Tim, we could probably talk for a long time. I think that you've given a pretty good overview as to what you do and how you got here. I absolutely appreciate you taking the time to be on the show.
No worries. I have enjoyed every second of it and happy to do it again or happy to make sure that we put Chris onto the mic and you can talk to him for a while.
Maybe we can do that at some point. I'll make sure to include in the show notes everything. And until then, thank you so much. And I will talk to you later, sir.
Okay. Thank you, John. Have a great weekend.
Today's trivia question. What is the largest piece of plate glass ever manufactured? On the next Blue Collar Voices show, I'll introduce you to Michael Paterno.
I currently run a hotshot truck. I'm an owner-operator in a F-350 one-ton dually with a 40-foot gooseneck. We transport anything that you would transport on a semi-truck under 15,000 pounds is what pretty much you can haul legally on a hotshot truck versus a semi-truck. You could haul up to 40,000 pounds on a flatbed or dry van semi. So it's just we follow under the same guidelines and requirements and rules and regulations as you would on a semi-truck. You need a Class A license.
Hey, guys, before you go, two things. The first is, I'm looking for more great guests for the Blue Collar Voices show. Basically, I'm looking for those that excel in the blue collar arena and have actually got their hands dirty, truly understanding what it is like to do the work. I realize this is an older podcast, but I'm updating this podcast in November 2019 for the announcement of an upcoming road trip. Phase one is building a list of locations to visit. Some locations will be just a meet and greet. Others will be on-site audio and or video. Please check out the website for more information. I'd love to hear from you. Email me at johnc@bluecollarvoices.com. You can also hit me up on LinkedIn. Thanks all. Looking forward to hearing from you. Blue Collar Voices is produced by John Chapman, and all audio, video, graphics are created and edited by John Chapman. Blue Collar Voices is a DR7 Media production.
I'll be back.